This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you guys doing? And welcome to the second session of logic, where we'll be going through some of the main, we said, some of the key, the principle, the chief rules of logic, propositional logic, L1 logic. And in the last session, we did go through, I would say, about 50% of some of the main rules in the most of the kind of syllabi that are put across the world in mathematic courses as well as in logic courses and philosophy courses. And this is one of the interesting places where all of these subjects meet. Engineering, computer engineering, mathematics, logic, philosophy, even to a lesser extent, language. A lot of these courses, logic courses, are in these. And now, obviously, in the age of AI, more and more people need to know these sequences and stuff like that. So what we're going to be doing in the beginning, because I don't want to rush this, and the reason why I don't want to rush this is because these rules, just like mathematics, even though I'm very poor, as many of you know, at mathematics, it requires mental kind of grappling, okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of interleave from last lesson, and we're going to start by, I'm going to ask you guys some questions, and then we're going to do a couple of exercises just to recap what we've done in the previous session. And then once I'm kind of confident and you guys are confident with yourselves on the rules that we've already covered, then we can move and give you new information, because otherwise it's going to be a lot of information. And maybe information overload as well. Okay, so let's get started with the basic forms. What was the name of... Actually, forget the name. What was the form, modus ponens? Who remembers the form?
If P,
yeah.
Then Q. P,
therefore Q. Okay. Now, can you give me an example of how this would look if you were to maybe put it into language?
So if it is 9 a.m., the shop is open.
Yeah.
It is 9 a.m., therefore the shop is open.
9 a.m., shop open. It is 9, therefore, yeah? Remember the language? Shop is open, yeah? No problem at all, that's good. What did we say about the difference between someone else that was good? So the difference between validity and soundness. Tariq, what is the difference between a valid argument and a sound argument?
A valid argument is an argument that has that adheres to the rules of logic.
Perfect. Yeah, excellent. And a sound argument, so as we said, a valid argument, it obeys, let's just say, obeys the rules of logic, yeah?
Yes.
So it has an internal consistency. But a sound argument is what?
A sound argument is one that has true premises.
Yes, it's true. So give me an example. Let's get someone else. Mehdi, of an argument which is valid but not sound. It's a difficult one, maybe.
Valid but not sound.
Yeah, maybe. Or let's just say, its soundness is questionable. It's valid, but it's sound. Whether it's sound or not, it's questionable. Because that way I'm not asking you to disprove something.
If the moon is outside, then everyone is awake.
Okay, yeah, brilliant.
The moon is outside, therefore everyone is awake.
Yeah, excellent, okay, no problem, yeah. If the moon is out, everyone must be awake. The moon is out, therefore everyone's awake. I mean, we would beg to differ with this. But it's still valid in the sense that, why is it valid, Mehdi?
It follows the laws of logic.
Yes.
Laws of logic.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so another thing we talked about is modus tonens. Who remembers the form of that? Yes?
If P, then Q. Not Q, therefore not P.
Good. If P, then Q. Not Q, therefore not P. Yeah? So let's, can you give me an example of this?
If I eat potato, I have an intake of starch. I have not had an intake of potato. It's starch, therefore I have not eaten potato.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, well done. That was excellent. I like it. That's actually very reasonable example there. Everyone is very sharp. With this one now, the third thing I'm going to ask you to do, I'm going to give you a little bit more time to think about, because I'll tell you why in a second, is the syllogism. Before I do give you more time to think about syllogisms, what did we say some of the types of syllogisms were, Othman?
Quasi.
Yes, quasi, yeah. What else? Give me another one.
Disjunctive.
Okay. Okay, what else?
Hypothetical,
okay. What else?
The poly one.
Poly, okay, excellent. I'm not going to write the whole thing because it will take time. Now, what I want you to do, okay, is before I ask you what I want you to do, a famous quasi-syllogism. Who remembers the Ghazalian form of the argument?
Is it?
Yeah.
Everything that has a beginning has a cause. The universe has a beginning, therefore the universe has a cause.
Beautiful, yeah? Everything that begins to exist has a cause. Obviously the atheist here can say, well, God, what about God? Say, well, he doesn't have a beginning, you see. Yeah? The universe has a beginning. Therefore, the universe has a cause. Okay, that's horrible handwriting, but if you want it fast, neat, was it? Speed kills neat. Everything that has a beginning has a cause, the universe has a beginning, therefore the universe has a cause. All right, let's now, I'm going to give you 5 minutes to speak to the next person next to you, 5 minutes, and you can use whatever type of syllogism you like to create your own argument for God's existence. We have to be knowledge producers. So now you know the rules, you can use them in kind. I'll give you about 5 minutes and then we'll come back and see what some of the arguments. It doesn't have to be this. Actually, it cannot be this, because then otherwise you're just copying it. And then we'll come back and we'll deal with it.
For the existence of God, you said.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Let's get some of the arguments, and then we move on to the next rule, okay? And what I was planning on doing, just to let you guys know, is we want to mix a little bit of Islamic studies. When I say Islamic, Islamic Arabic logic, yeah? Islamicate logic, whatever you want to say about it. And propositional logic, because it's just, I want to give you the basics, some of the most important things that you're going to keep coming up, you're going to keep seeing in the literature and stuff like that. But it all depends on how quickly we can get things done. Okay, so we need to be secure with the knowledge. Let's start with Othman, why not? Give me some arguments for God's existence using syllogisms.
So we're doing a poly syllogism.
Yes,
and we're doing, there are dependent existences.
Yeah.
If there are dependent existences, then there is a necessary existence. Therefore, there is a necessary existence.
Yeah, I mean, ideally you'd want to add maybe another premise in there. You've got poly syllogism, so you can add a lot more.
Sure.
Premises, but you get the idea that what makes this different from another syllogism is that you're adding two pieces of information. You're not going from a general to a specific. But if you wanted to add, if you want to make this polemical and you wanted to go against like an atheist and speak like this, I would add a little bit more, because the second premise that you've said would require a lot more justification. Like, so okay, well now you're gonna have to go into another argument to prove your second argument.
So we thought about that, and we did another example, which was like, if there is existence, dependent existences must come from independent existences. So it just fleshed it out a little bit.
Yeah, that's what you'd want. That's what you'd want. Okay, let's go to the next, guys. Are you guys? I'm taking it as both of you have come with that conclusion, right?
Yes.
That's fine.
This one's a bit strange, but we can only imagine what we've experienced. We can imagine God. That means we've experienced God.
Yes. Okay, it's quite similar to some forms of the ontological argument.
Yeah, and then we've...
What's the first premise?
We can only imagine what we've experienced. We can imagine God, therefore we've experienced God. Something like
that. Yeah, we can imagine what we have experienced. We have experienced God. We have imagined God. Therefore, we have experienced God. Okay.
And we have another one. Intelligent design requires intelligent will. The universe is intelligently designed for life. Therefore, there was an intelligent will.
Okay, brilliant. It's once again very valid. Obviously, now someone's going to attack you and stuff. But so long as you can speak like this. Because if you speak like this, I mean, people lose at the first hurdle because they speak in a way that sounds logic, like logic, but it's not logic. But now you're being coherent. That's very good. Let's go to the next one.
We have one which is destructive.
Yeah, well, okay, yep.
So this is... the universe is either created or it created itself.
Mm-hmm.
The universe cannot have created itself. Therefore, it's created.
Okay, why not? Yeah, yeah. Either this or that. It's not this, therefore that. Yeah. That's the basic... Remember, we talked about that last time. We didn't cover that in the beginning. But it's either this or that. It's this, therefore that. The only thing someone can say is a false... What? You've heard this before. They say it's a false dichotomy.
Right, yeah.
There are things which are not false dichotomies. You hear this all the time. It's a false dichotomy. It's a false trichotomy. They have to prove that it's a false dichotomy, a false trichotomy. If I say either you're alive or you're not alive, you see, oh, well, that's a false dichotomy. No, it's a matter of fact. Either there is existence or there is no existence. Oh, that's a false dichotomy. No, that's not a false dichotomy, actually. You just need to make sure that whatever you're putting in the disjunction is an exhaustive explanation of all that you get from this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a logical principle and show you... I don't think people do this. I don't know why they don't. Okay, I'm going to show you how this links to usul al-fiqh. Usul al-fiqh is the principles of jurisprudence, because it's the principles of jurisprudence... Who quickly knows what that means? What is this?
Of Islamic law.
Of Islamic law.
Yeah.
So you'll find that there are some people that attack. They will attack us. They will attack me. They will attack you. They will attack him.
Like Sharia?
No, they will attack us because we're even engaging in discussion about logic, right?
Yeah.
But the same people will have to study usul al-fiqh. Okay, what's this usul al-fiqh? It's the principles of jurisprudence. Now, I'm going to give you something which is concurrent in both propositional logic and usul al-fiqh. It's the same idea but being said in a different way. And that's why I'm bringing it to the table. It's the idea of necessary and sufficient conditions. Necessary and sufficient conditions. Now, let's talk Islamic law. And these are usually the conversations we have before the tape begins, but let's just do what we need to do today. If I want to get married, I'm not talking about me. I'm very happily married. I don't need any woman pestering me on the, private messages or anything like that. You will not get a response. Just to be clear. No, I have to be confident about this matter. You'll not get a response. But what I'm saying is, if someone wants to get married, yes? If someone wants to get married, what is a necessary condition, and what is a sufficient condition? So I tell you, a necessary condition from the Islamic perspective, and some people will not like this, is that the person has to be female. If it's a man that's getting married, in order for the marriage to be valid, for validity to happen, okay, then it has to be a female. Now, many people will be upset by that, but it's the case. But is that a sufficient condition? So now, if I bring a female, well, I'm not going to say I bring her like, you know, but if a female comes into this room and one of you wants to marry her and says, look, here I am and here you are, and did you not know that one of the necessary conditions in Islamic law for a marriage to take place is that you be female and I be male. Therefore, the hotel is right next door. Is this okay?
No.
It's not okay because it's not a what condition? Ha ha! Hopefully she doesn't use that kind of language. So this is not a sufficient condition. Because a sufficient condition is you need to have two witnesses in Islamic law. Two witnesses. Right. What else do you need to have?
Wali.
Well, according to the Jumhur, I'm going to put J, Wali. Okay, the Hanafis don't actually believe that. Okay, for the sake of argument. What else you need? Mahar. You guys need to know this. For more reasons than one. Not just logic here, but for life as well. These are the three conditions. These are called, actually, arkan. They called it arkan, but really, pillars of the nikah. But these are the conditions you need. Two witnesses. You need a mahar. And you need a wali. And of course, you need her consent. And she needs to be a woman as well. Okay, so that's... Let's say, for example, these are necessary conditions and these are sufficient conditions. In propositional logic, this is basically P, Q. Simple as that. That's how it looks. Something can be a necessary condition for something, but it's not a sufficient condition for something. If I say, in an Islamic marriage, if a man and a woman are together with two witnesses but no mahar and wali, yeah, that's, it's not, it does not fulfill the sufficient condition. Do you see what I mean? Now, in usul al-fiqh, very interesting the way that people, or the usulis, have actually defined this. Because there are two words that you'll come across quite often. One is called a shart. It's the Arabic word for condition. Shart is condition, okay? And it has a very specific definition, which is the following. I'm going to write it in English and in Arabic. Let me just make sure that I'm writing it correctly, yeah? It's ما يلزم من عدمه العدم. Yeah? What necessitates from its non-existence, non-existence. ما يلزم من عدمه العدم. ولا يلزم من وجوده وجود ولا عدم. So what necessitates from its non-existence, what necessitates from its non-existence, non-existence. So zero equals zero. If it's not there, the thing will not be there. In the case of usul fiqh, the hukum, the ruling will not be there. Yeah? وَلَا يَلْزَمُ مِنْ وُجُودِهِ. Actually, it's not necessary. يَلْزَمُ means necessary. إِلْزَام, تَلَازُم, means necessary. وَلَا يَلْزَمُ مِنْ وُجُودِهِ. وُجُود وَلَا عَدَم. So if it's لَا يَلْزَمُ, it's not necessary that if it's there, that the thing, the hukum will be there, or that its non-existence will be there either. I'll tell you an example. Actually, we just used an example. Yes? But we can give you some... What's some of the usuli examples they give for the shart? We can look at the standard example for prayer and stuff like that. And mana'a. Oh, by the way, a mana'a, preventer, is the opposite of a shart. A preventer is exactly the opposite. The sabab, which means cause in Arabic. Yeah? So this is the condition. The sabab is ما, basically the same thing. ما يلزم من عدمه ما يلزم من عدمه العدم ويلزم. It's not ولا يلزم here. It's ويلزم. Yeah. ويلزم من وجوده وجود وعدم. So it says. Shall I write it down? It's easier for you. So, okay, let me write it down so I don't get this wrong. ما يلزم. I'm going to tell you what this means. من وجوده الوجود. Which means, if it's there necessarily, yes, the thing, the hukum will necessarily be there. So it's stronger. A sabab is stronger than a shart. A condition is... So in a sense, this is the shart is a... They're both conditions in one sense, because they both have an if structure. But the shart is a condition which we could call it a necessary condition. Whereas the sabab is a sufficient condition. Okay? So, ما يلزم من وجوده الوجود. Yeah? Which means that when it's there, what necessitates from its existence, the existence of the thing. ولا يلزم من وجوده, sorry, ومن عدمه العدم. And if it's not there, the حكم will not be there. ومن عدمه العدم. The reason why I'm bringing this to your attention is to show you that this logic is part of Islamic law, actually. The necessary and sufficient conditions is effectively the difference between shart and sabab. You cannot be a faqih and not know this. How, you know? You see what I mean? So someone says, well, you're not allowed to study logic. But you're allowed to study usul fiqh. Because if you study usul fiqh, you have to study these distinctions, which is effectively what we've just studied. Do you see what I'm saying? So you can choose some of them and not some of them. How do you decide? Do you see what I mean? It's problematic for those guys. They must not know this stuff. Yes.
Like you could also just argue that. Well, then if you, because you're using logic all the time. Like you can't speak without using logic.
Exactly.
So it's a bit daft that you can't study. Exactly. You know what I mean? How you speak.
It's true. But do you see the difference between shart and sabab? Yeah. Okay. So the condition here and the cause now. This is going to get, I'm going to give you a little bit more complication here. Is everyone comfortable with this, first of all? Any questions? Because this is pretty simple, okay? Yes?
Is this why Al-Ghazali said he doesn't trust anyone that didn't study logic?
Yeah, probably. Because if you don't trust, remember, he put his epistemological beginning in Al-Mustasfa, a book of Usul. So he put a logical thing in the book of Usul to show you that the two things are not divided. Yes?
So shart is the necessary condition and sabab is the sufficient condition in Arabic.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, not in Arabic, not in the language, but in the usuli definitions.
Okay.
Effectively, that's what we're talking about. Yes. They're talking about the same thing. When usuli say, ما يلزم من عدمه العدم. يلزم means it's necessary, that if it's not there, that it's not going to be there. So, which means a sabab is stronger than a shart. Because it's a necessary condition, whereas that one's a sufficient, it's a sufficient condition, whereas a shart is a necessary condition. That's effectively what we're talking about here. Now, let me make things a little bit more complicated, because Ibn Sina and Aristotle, both of them have written logic handbooks, okay? Probably the best of their times, quite frankly, yeah? And Ibn Sina makes a very good point. And the point is going back to this idea of sabab, a cause, because when we talk about everything that can I rub this out? Everything that begins to exist has a cause and all that stuff, right? We assume that we're talking a cause is always a singular thing. Do you see what I mean? Now, if I say a cause is a singular thing, what is a cause? Definitionally, a cause, just to make sure that you guys know, is something, even in the dictionary, this is how it defines, is something which brings rise to phenomena. Yeah? Now, something which brings rise to phenomenon of phenomena. If I say now, look, I'm going to put this lid on this pen. No problem here. Maybe I'll do this first, just to make it look good, yeah? So what is the cause of the lid going onto the pen like that? Yes, okay, you can argue. Cause, what caused the lid to go on the pen?
You.
Okay, so let's be specific. You said you, okay, fine. Let's be extremely specific.
Your action.
Oh, okay, you see. It's the force. Physics, where's the physics? Okay, it's the physics, yeah? Can you tell us what's going on here in physics terms?
Your muscle is producing a force.
No, this is not physics, this is biology, brother. Come on, tell me now. What's going on?
Your muscles are producing a force which counteracts the gravity of the pen or of the lid, and that allows you to hold the lid up and fold it onto the
pen. So let's just call it force for the layman, yeah? Like me. Force. Okay. So that is, you can call that, in a sense, efficient cause. Now, the thing is, you've got to remember, Aristotle divided causes into four. Yeah? Who knows what they are? This is a very technical, question. Yes. Aristotle, and this has been used throughout the years.
Formal cause.
Aha, the formal cause, the form. So what's the form of this pen? It's cylindrical shape it is, right? That's the form of this. Okay, fine. What else you got?
Sufficient cause.
No, not sufficient. Material cause. Okay, brilliant. So the thing is, if you consider the fact, like, let's be real, Yanni, I can't do this unless there was a plastic cylindrical piece of, or a tip of a pen that I'm holding with my right hand, and then a cylindrical rest of the pen which I'm holding with my left. So the lack of existence, when we say that, what's the cause of something? I can't put this on this unless either of them exist in a material form. So if I were to ask you again, the physicist, you know, how does this do this? You are talking about the force, and that's more what you call the efficient cause. Okay, what's going on? The actions, okay, for the efficient cause, no problem. You know, and the last one's called the end cause, by the way, yeah? There's four causes. Efficient, form, material, end cause. These are the four causes that Aristotle talked about. The reason why this is important is because, as Ibn Sina mentions, actually it's not one cause that does anything. It's a combination of causes that causes something to happen. So if I say, what happens when I'm putting this tip on the pen? It's not enough for you to say, well, the cause, and when we say cause, we talk about a necessary cause, a sufficient cause, is one of those things. If we want to be very detailed about the matter, we'd have to mention everything, because everything is there. Obviously, if someone says any one of those things, it wouldn't be false. It wouldn't be false information. You say, the reason why this pen, the lid got on the pen, is because you put it on there with your, and the force, the action, and whatever. What's the formula for it? Do you know?
F equals ma.
Oh yes. So F equals what?
Ma.
What's ma?
M is mass. A is acceleration.
Beautiful. I like this kind of things. You said that really quickly. I'm very impressed. F equals ma. If I say, look, F equals, and I tell you the numbers and stuff like that, and this is what it is, I wouldn't be speaking a lie, would I? Would your physics teacher have a problem with me if I told him this?
No.
He would not. He may have problems with me for other ideological reasons, but he would not have a problem with me on this basis. But I'm saying that if you mention any of those causes, it's fine. You know, the material cause, the end cause, the efficient cause, whatever. These are all fine to mention. In combination, that's the most elaborative, this, you know, thing. You say the cause of this pen, and you start everything, all the kinds of causes there are. You see? So now what we've talked about, just quickly, is we've spoke about the difference between what and what, first and foremost.
Necessary
and sufficient cause. And then we've spoken about the difference in usul fiqh between what and what? Shart and sabab. And what we said is that really and truly what the logicians are talking about in this arena is effectively what?
The same
as what these guys are talking about in this arena. Because they're talking about yalzamu, which means what?
Necessary.
Necessitates. Yes, it means necessitates. And one is the definition of shart is without necessity, and the definition of sabab is with it. But then we said a sabab is a cause. And is a cause one thing? No, according to Aristotle and those who came after him, it could be a combination of things, which include what? The material cause, the form of it, the efficient cause, which is the most talked about cause, by the way. Yani, if people speak about cause as a shorthand, they usually talk about the efficient cause.
Is that like the carpenter? Is the efficient cause?
Yes, for example, yeah. But then obviously the material itself and stuff like that is also the cause, as we've mentioned, yes? And we spoke about four different kinds of causes, and these are the famous four causes of whom?
Aristotle,
who's the first person who mentioned. So far, so good, yeah? All right, so what I want you to do for the next 5 minutes, speak to the person next to you, speak about things, give me examples of things which this is the sufficient condition, this is the necessary condition of it. And this is actually very useful and applicable in daily life. You know what I mean? Because if you have a conversation with someone, like for example, if I say to my son, I'll take you to the play area if you do your homework. effectively, he can do his homework and say, look, take me to the play area. I said, I didn't say that was the only thing. That's a necessary course, but not. I mean, I'm always going to do this. I mean, it's a bit, but technically speaking, this is true. If you do that, but I didn't say that's the only thing you have to do. There could be other things you must do. For the nikah to be valid, these things have to be in place. Does anything else need to be in place? No. Can a nikah be valid if someone brings a WhatsApp group and brings two friends and gives a mahar to the woman and says, bring your father on the line? Yes, it can be valid according to the majority of people. Can that take 2 minutes? Yes. Can. But what if he doesn't have the two people? Okay, Yani, this is a problem if you don't have the two people. So how easy it is to get married in Islam? Anyways, with that being said, 5 minutes, that was one example. Maybe a non-nikah example. And then tell us in 5 minutes. So let's just do a quick revision of something, right? We said modus tollens, yeah? Who remembers the form of that?
If P, then Q, not Q, therefore not P.
Okay, what's the key words here? Not. And this is how it's, you know, symbolized in logic. The not is like this, as you guys have seen before. Like that, yeah? Okay. Be careful. Because there is, if you try and affirm this, it's not the case. Let me explain how. If I say modus tollens is if P, then Q, yes? Not what?
Not Q.
Q, therefore not?
P.
Therefore, not P. Okay. If I say, if P then Q, and then I say Q, therefore P. See what I've done here?
You affirmed the second one.
Yes, this is called the consequent, yeah? This is called the antecedent, and this is called the consequent. The antecedent is the, anything which is comes before is called antecedent. This is called the consequent, because it comes after. Consequent. This is the antecedent, this is called the consequent. This is a logical fallacy. And by the way, in Usul al-Fiqh, some have tried to use this kind of logic in what some refer to, some, as mafhum al-mukhalafa. It's incorrect. Logically, a lot of people say it's incorrect. Let me give you an example. If you say... Let me give you the example that I found online. It's a good one. The light is broken. Therefore, the room is dark. The room is dark. Therefore what? The light is broken. It doesn't follow that if this is this, this is this. Does that make sense? No, it doesn't work like this. This is the incorrect form of mafhum mukhalafa.
There's an difference
between the correct form and the incorrect form.
Now, if you say like a du'a huwa al-ibada, can you do mafhum mukhalafa with that?
No, you can't. Because there's other forms of ibadah which is not du'a. Do you see the point? That's a great example, in fact. Because if someone says a du'a huwa al-ibada, supplication is worship. Is all of worship so if there's no supplication, does that mean there's no worship? Not really. So, mafhum mukhalafa, because someone could do zakat, he's still doing worship. He's nusuk, he's still doing worship. Someone can do something else, he's still doing worship. This is an incorrect form of mafhum mukhalafa. Now, go back to Al-Ghazali and these guys to see why it's important to study logic. Because they actually use, some people, some fuqaha, you'll find that they use this kind of logic. Big timers. So, this and that. That's why, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Ibn Hazm, he denied the whole concept. He said this, right? I don't know, maybe he did. I'm not sure if he did it or not. But mafhum mukhalafa, there are some types of it which are acceptable. This type is definitely not acceptable. Why? Now, this is a very technical question. Let's use our minds. Why is it not acceptable? Go back to the difference between what the Usulis refer to as a shart and a sabab. It's connected, by the way.
You haven't provided a sufficient condition.
Yes, that's right. That's a very good answer. I was surprised. This is very good.
It's a teacher.
Huh. Because it's not... It goes back to the idea that we just spoke about, the difference between the necessary and the sufficient. Do you see what I mean? Because it's not a sufficient condition. Go back to the light and the room example. The light is broken, therefore what? The room is
dark.
So then I say the room is dark, therefore the light is broken. Assumes what? That the light is the only thing that can shine up the room. What if I open the curtains like that and there's a beautiful moon and it's in all its glory and it's shining, even more so a sun, the sun itself or something. It can shine up the room, right? Lighten up the room. You don't need the candle or the light. Do you see what I mean? So the idea that if P then Q, Q therefore P, is actually a logical fallacy in propositional logic. This form of mafhum al-mukhalafa literally is incorrect. But there are forms of it which can be correct. But they would have to have a symbiotic relationship. That's the only situations which that can be okay. It would have to be a seesaw relationship. A equals B and B equals A. We're talking about biconditionals and stuff like that. Where literally this equals this and this equals that. Apart from that, this is affirming the consequent, it's a logical fallacy, actually. It's a logical fallacy. You can't say just because, if P then Q, Q therefore P. It's a logical fallacy, in fact. Does this make sense, guys?
So it's just one way. So it's P then Q, you can't go back the other way.
That's what we're saying is, unless there's good reason for it to be both ways.
So for example,
Sorry,
I would say, if I visit London, then I visited England.
Yeah.
I visited England, therefore I visited London. Mm. That's what we're talking about. Well,
that's all right.
It's not sufficient.
No, if I visited England, then I visited London.
If I visited London, I visited England.
That's fine. That's modus ponens.
If I visited England,
if P then Q, P therefore Q. That's what you're saying. That's modus ponens. That's fine.
No.
But if I say I did not visit England, therefore I did not visit London, that's fine.
That's modus tollens. If you say if P, not Q.
His first example is affirming the consequent. He said, if I visited London, then I visited England, then the second premise is I visited England. So he's affirming the consequent, therefore I visited London.
Fine. Look, remember the difference between modus tollens and affirming the consequent. It's a very fine difference. What's the difference? If we said, let's go to modus tollens again. What's modus tollens? If P, then Q. What is it?
Not Q, therefore not P.
See, the difference between modus tollens and affirming the consequence is what? Is negation. That's effectively the difference, negation.
But in this scenario, I think...
premise two and the conclusion.
So, I was just saying, in this example, the negation is true or correct, whereas the other way around it wouldn't be true if I said... So for example, I visited London, therefore I visited England... I visited England, therefore London.
Sorry. Let's start with the conditional. If I visited London.
I visited England.
Then I visited England.
Yes.
Yeah? Then what are you saying after?
I visited England.
Ah, okay.
Therefore, when it's positive, it's false.
Aha.
When it's negative, it's true.
Yeah. If you're saying that I visited, you're putting the conclusion, you're saying that you're putting the consequent first, yeah?
Yeah.
And that would be the logical fallacy. Because now, if you go here with the logical fallacy, remember, if you remove the negations, now we're removing the negations. If P, then Q. Q. Therefore P. That's the logical fallacy. Yeah? Yeah, that's better. Yeah, if you now make it good, if you make it England, because if you say London, that's a true statement, right? If you haven't visited London, you have to visit England, then you got this. It confuses the matter.
I visited England, therefore I visited London. That's the fallacy.
Yeah.
Could visit other parts of England.
It's true in terms of the form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to practice this? Because this is a hard one. I'll give you guys 5 minutes to practice this. So I want you to do the following. give me one modus tollens and one affirming the consequent and show me the difference between the two. One example, just one example. And we're nearly finished, guys, you know? I know this is like very difficult, I mean, not very difficult, but it's just dry and stuff like that, but it's interesting as well, because when you start applying it to things, fiqh, marriage, you know, God's existence, arguments for God's existence, it starts to become quite interesting then. Okay, let's, before we move into the next stage, let me ask you guys, what you've, just put your hands up if you want to present. Yeah.
If you eat kosher, you've had a caloric intake. I've not had a caloric intake, therefore I've not eaten
beautiful,
kosher.
Beautiful, excellent.
So we're going to do the...
That's really good.
If I eat kosher, I'll have a caloric intake. Yeah. I've had a caloric intake, therefore I've eaten kosher, which is not true. You could have eaten something else.
Okay, I see. What you've done there is you've attacked the Egyptian culture. Kosher is an Egyptian. I mean, I think there's a new restaurant now in Edgeo Road, but it's very good. Excellent. I'm liking you. You're doing very well today, by the way. Any other things for family? So, you know, you understand. Effectively, I want you to link in your mind the idea of affirming the consequent with what? What's the other thing we talked about? No, that's the right way of doing it. But what did we do right before it?
Affirming the consequent with
necessary and sufficient conditions. Because I want to just say this one more time. I like this example I found online. This room, if this room is dark, the light is broken. Let me just get the exact thing. If this room, yeah, if the light is broken, if this room is dark. If the light is broken, the room is dark. No doubt, if I break this light now, and that light, the room will get dark. Let me just, actually. Demonstrate. You want to switch your... Okay, is it dark?
No.
Okay, yeah, it's darker than it was. Okay. Now, put them back on. So, Yanni, just in case anyone had a problem with my... had to do an experiment. If I switch off the lights, the room will get dark. But then if I say, the room is dark, therefore, the light is switched off. It doesn't follow. Because it could be date, it could be the light is switched on, but it's flickering, anything could be. It goes back to what? Necessary and sufficient conditions. The light doesn't have the power, if you like, to determine the brightness fully. To be the only factor that determines this thing. Yes?
I have one question. I hope it doesn't derail the flow, but
yeah.
What's the difference between a logical fallacy like we've cited and like a really unsound argument? Because, yeah, one is it doesn't follow the rules of logic.
The difference
example,
is the premises,
like,
whether it's true or not.
No, I know in that sense, but like when you see an unsound argument, it's oh, but it's valid and stuff like this.
Yeah, but that's where the fight is. That's where you have to use your... That's where the fight is.
Yeah.
That's where the debate is.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Isn't logical fallacy not when you come up with an incorrect conclusion? So whereas,
using the premises.
Whereas with what you were mentioning, it's because the premises aren't true. Like when it's an unsound argument, because the premises aren't true.
I mean, remember, every sound thing is valid, but not every sound argument is valid, but not every valid argument is sound. In fact, a necessary condition, okay, a necessary condition for an argument to be sound is validity, but it's not a sufficient condition. Let me put it this way, because many people will be watching at home. I want this to really to come into their minds and into their hearts and for them to understand. Many of them have gone through heartbreak. A woman has hurt them in their life. If I say, look, if Layla is, for the sake of argument, call her Layla because she's, you know, associated with that Majnoon and all that kind of stuff. Say, if Layla is not in his life, his heart will be broken. His heart is broken, therefore Layla is not in his life. It's not only Layla that can break his heart. It can be so many other women. But likewise, I can do it, that's a negative way of putting it. If I put it a positive way, if Layla is not in his life, he will be happy or sad or whatever. Yeah? Let's say he will be happy if Layla is in his life. He will be happy if Layla is life, then if I say he is not happy, no, not happy. How do I put this? You tell me. Actually, I should be. I'm doing all the work for you.
He's happy.
He is happy. Yeah. Therefore, Layla's in his life. Yeah. Yani, she's the only one that can make him happy.
Yeah, maybe for
him. Maybe for him. That, but this individual logically is in, not right. This is what you say to him.
That's not logical.
It's because what he's done here is because he thinks he associates all of his happiness with what? With the one woman. He thinks that she's the sufficient condition for his happiness. He's wrong about that. That's a logical fallacy. Because he's done mufum mukhalafa. You see the point? It can be. When someone is in love, they think it's the only thing that's making them like that is the person. But do you know what I mean? So it's, hopefully that's closer to heart. Okay, let's do biconditionals quickly, guys.
I just have a quick question.
Yes, yes. So
affirming the consequence, consequent,
yep.
Makes it not valid. It removes its validity. Before you touch soundness.
Yes,
is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes.
So if we do this, the argument is not valid.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, perfect. All right. Now, there is a point where, I think this is the only point in logic, where actually you can do mufum mukhalafa. I don't think there's any other way you can do mufum mukhalafa, logically speaking. Meaning, there's the only way that if A is B, B is also A. Yani. Or the opposite is true. If you say this, then it goes back the same way. Which is what is referred to as a biconditional. And it takes the following form. I think they also put an equal there, I'm not sure. Yeah? Is it true? So if P is Q, if P equals Q, Q yani equals P. But we're talking about the same kind of values here. So let me give an example, right? As I found this online, it's a nice example. A rectangle is a square. A rectangle is a square, and this is what they use, look, if and only if, now don't use this phrase unless you know you're going to speak about biconditionals, okay? Yeah, a rectangle is a square if and only if, yes, it has adjacent sides, sorry, or if and only if the adjacent sides are congruent. So go B now. If a rectangle is a square, then the adjacent sides are congruent. So you can see now there is mufum mukhalafa. There is a bit of that is coherent. If you go A then B, B then A, that's where it does go both ways. That's where there is a symbiosis. I'm feeding you, you're feeding me. The same information, the same values. A rectangle is a square if and only if the adjacent sides are congruent. If a rectangle is a square, then the adjacent sides are congruent. Works both ways. Because the sufficient conditions are met on both sides. Do you see what's happening here? But this, in order to distinguish whether the thing in question is, this is applicable, or whether, or not, in fact, you have to know the values very well. So Ibn Hazm, he mentioned, this is where people make the biggest mistakes. In mafhum al-mukhalafa. It's actually this idea, affirming the consequent, biconditionals, the symbiosis, the A equals B, B equals A, P equals Q, Q equals P, is where the majority of mistakes, according to Ibn Hazm, al-Andalusi, one of the greatest minds in Islamic history, make problems when they do ahkam. Because they assume that if P is Q and then they affirm the consequent, then the opposite must be true. But then it's not applicable. The consequent is not to be affirmed in this situation. But when is it to be affirmed? It's when there's sufficient conditions on both sides. But how could you prove as a faqih, as an Islamic jurist, that there's sufficient conditions on both sides? You have to show through evidence that that is the case. But most fuqaha, they don't attempt to do this. Why? Because many of them haven't been trained. As Al-Ghazali mentioned, in this situation, some of them think it's haram to talk about this. It's not just Salafis. And now we believe it's haram. You believe that? Al-Akhdar, he mentions in his Sulum Munawraq, he mentions that now we says this and this and that. It's not just Salafis that believe that. It's not Madkhali only and Abu Khadija. It's not just those. No, it's yani. I'm just saying it's also it's in the tradition. It's yani. Some prominent people from all schools had an issue with, but then they fall into mistakes. Why you fall into mistakes like this? Do you know what I mean? So okay, now you can't. You don't need to fall into here at the Sapiens Institute. We can't afford to fall into mistakes like this. Yani. This is not a matter, this is about of kufr and iman. By conditional, this one, the atheist, he wants to try and leverage you and twist your arm and stuff like that. You tell him, no, this is this and this is that. And use the language. Anyway, any problem with the conditionals or the biconditionals? Any questions on it?
Can you give another example?
Yeah, okay, that's a good,
Or like a Sherry example, like what mistakes...
That's a really good. That's a really good question. Right now, nothing has come to my mind. I don't know what. Where? Let's go open the books of Ibn Hazm and see how he's. Have you got one?
Maybe one thing to verify, but Ibn Hazm, he did have an opinion on that the hadith that mentions that the silence of the female is her consent. So he saw this as biconditional. So he saw that if she actually does consent and she says yes, then this actually nullifies.
Oh, really?
The marriage. Yeah.
So he does his own qiyas. I thought he's the guy. He's
everyone falls to qiyas.
There you have it. He's doing qiyas. If that's I think I remember that mas'ala. Interesting. Anyway, because Ibn Hazm is a school of thought. He doesn't believe in qiyas apparently, and so on. You know, is dhahiri. But yeah, so the biconditional thing is there. Any questions? What did you say? You wanted to say another... What was the example you used last week? Something about... I can't remember if there was an example you used, a good one. Is there any other... Do you want to use more examples? Do you want more time to think of examples for this? Before, because I'm weary of the time and we need to do one more thing at least, which is a feminine antecedent.
The example of the Mahdi, his name, has to be like...
Muhammad ibn Abdullah.
Yeah, Muhammad ibn Abdullah. Yeah. If his name is Muhammad ibn Abdullah, then...
He's
the Mahdi.
Yeah, okay, fine. Because it's a sufficient condition for him. But yeah. It's not sufficient for him to have that name to be the Mahdi, though. So how would you put it in a way that would make it?
He would also have, like, there are other conditions as well, right?
So, so that wouldn't work.
Okay.
That wouldn't work.
Maybe like Mecca and the place of pilgrimage for Muslims.
Give me, you show me.
I don't know how to place it. Mecca is the place of pilgrimage for Muslims if and only if it's the month of Dhul Hijjah. It's the month of Dhul Hijjah, therefore it's the place for pilgrimage for Muslims. Mecca is the place for pilgrimage for Muslims.
You'd have to put Mecca in both. You'd have to form it right because you'd have to put Mecca in both.
Yeah.
Yani, think about it. You're on the right tracks for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. This is difficult to get. Yani, most situations. And by the way, I was reading a book by Mario Bungi about causality. Yeah. Mario Bungi is a guy who wrote a whole thick book on causality. And there are different kinds of causality. There's retro causality, there's this, that. And there's one that's like symbiotic causality. If A causes B, B causes A. It's a bit like a seesaw. Like, for example, you have a seesaw and they both cause each other, yani. If I go on this side, this other person goes here, and they're both kind of weighing each other out. So that kind of causality can exist. A equals B, B equals A. But it exists within a closed system. Do you see what I mean? I mean, it's not an irrational kind of causality, like A causes B and B causes A. Yeah? There is that, but it's within certain contexts. If someone says, well, the universe caused you and you caused the universe, it doesn't work like this. Do you know what I mean? You'd have to specify the context in a closed system. You can have A equals B, B equals A. And that's why it's important for some arguments for God's existence and stuff like that as well. Yeah. All right, let's do affirming the... Actually, one more thing before we do affirming the antecedent, which is, I think, probably the last thing we're going to do, is conjunctions. Now, what did we say conjunctions were last time, if you remember?
Okay.
You cannot have a negatory conclusion. Does that make sense? So if I say, look, I'm drinking this coffee, and I'm drinking this green juice. I have both now. Look, P, I'm drinking this coffee. Q is I'm drinking this green. And P and Q is I'm drinking both. Now, I don't have to do this, but yeah, do you get what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. That's all, it's all it is.
Okay,
simple as that. I know sometimes we think we're doing something, this is the easiest one in the book. Okay, now we're going to get something a bit more difficult, though. Remember, we talked about affirming the consequent, okay, which was hard, okay, in a sense that you're not going to get it the first time, you have to think about it, you have to grapple with it in your mind. In a sense, it's hard. For proposition logic, it's hard. Okay, there are other types of logics, in which case this stuff is all easy. But we said that affirming the consequent is connected to modus what? Let's just recap one more time. So what's affirming the consequent? What's the form of it?
So if P, then Q, Q, therefore P. Q, therefore P.
That's wrong.
That's wrong. That's affirming the consequent.
So how do we make it right?
Not Q, therefore not P.
Excellent. Okay. We spoke about why that's the case. Affirming the antecedent. Now, we said you've got two things. We always talk about P and Q, all right? Where is the antecedent and where's the consequent?
P is the antecedent.
All right. So we spoke about the consequent, which is this one, right? That's the consequent. Now, we're going to just spend a little bit to talk about the antecedent here. So now we'll talk about the antecedent. There's a fallacy called denying the antecedent. So how do we deny the antecedent? We say the following. We say, if P then Q, number one, if P then Q. What does this sound like already? Modus what? Ponens. Yes? The first thing we ever went through. If P then Q, P therefore Q. But instead of saying the right thing, we're going to say not P. So what are we denying here?
Antecedent.
Yes. So we say, therefore, not what?
Q.
Not, sorry, I shouldn't do both. Not Q. Not Q. Wait a minute. Do I have a right to do this?
No.
No, I haven't got a right to do this. Because the similitude of me doing this would be, it's like saying the following. It's like saying the following. Let me make it a bit humorous so you can understand. Or maybe there's some truth in this. Let's find out. Let's see from the people. If you are Sapiens team, which all of you are, if you are Sapiens team, like all of us, you are a real man. Obviously, if you're a woman as well, no, of course you can be a woman. But still, you're a real man, woman, yeah? Not in that sense, but anyway. If you are a Sapiens team, you are a real man. Let's just say, pretend you're not, unfortunately, say, you haven't declared your interests or your... You haven't declared publicly that you're a Sapiens team. Therefore, you're not what?
Real man.
This is embarrassing. Therefore, you're not real man. This cannot be. It doesn't follow. This is too much. Because someone could argue there's other ways of being a real man. I know it's a very difficult argument to make, but nevertheless, it's one that you can make. Because it goes back to what and what?
For the example of London and England, I've been to London, I've been in England.
Yeah.
I've not been to London, therefore I've not been to England. That's not true. You could have been to Manchester, England,
yes.
But you didn't have to go to London.
Yes, beautiful, excellent. Yeah. But before we get to that example, because I like that, I want you to answer one question. What are we doing here? What's the issue?
We're assuming that being part of Sapiens team is a sufficient condition.
Ah, that's it. That's the one. That's the one. Everything's going back to what? Sufficient and necessary condition. You see why that's an important one now, yeah? Because it affects the affirming the consequent and also denying the antecedent, the two probably the most important formal logical fallacies that you could fall into. But because they're correct for modus ponens and modus tollens, it rectifies the issue. Also, biconditionals rectify the issue. You got two problems and many solutions. But here the problem is this: if I say that, for example, actually I should be asking you at this point. I've given you my example. Yeah, can you give me an example of this, of denying the antecedent?
So. If I am the imam.
Yes.
Then I will lead the prayer. I am not the imam, therefore, I will not lead the prayer.
Not the imam.
Yep. Therefore, I'll not lead the prayer.
Yeah. Not lead the prayer. Not lead prayer. Yeah. Why is this wrong?
Because I denied the antecedent.
Yes, and the antecedent is this one, right?
Yeah, I am the imam.
Yes, excellent. Beautiful. One more example, just to call it a night, because this is a lot of hard work here today. One more example, maybe.
If I am a dog, then I am an animal.
Mm.
I am not a dog, therefore I am not an animal.
And this is how children reason, honestly. Wallahi. This is how dumb people reason. They always use this stuff. They always say this stuff. I've had to have lots of debates with 5 and 6 year olds, and they always say this. So I say, look, if you don't do this, then this, and then they say, well, that means if you don't do this, I'm like, no, it doesn't. It doesn't follow because it's your. I don't want to say that. When I say children, it includes adults as well. A lot of people argue like this, and they just don't understand that this is fallacious reasoning. But now you can explain it to them. So are you saying, you've seen that famous interview with Cathy Newham and Jordan Peterson. If he knew logic, he would have torn her up in a different way. Say, this is a logical fallacy because you're denying the antecedent and because you're affirming the consequent. And she does that all the time. So you're saying. And when she says, you're saying, and she brings it up, a lot of the times, I haven't assessed the transcript. She's denying something. She's denying the antecedent, or she's affirming the consequent or something. If he said it like that, it would have been even more technically catastrophic for her. Because you're explaining to them why they're wrong. So you're saying if you don't believe in this, no, it doesn't follow that way, because you're confusing sufficient and necessary conditions. This is going to be so useful to you when you're debating people or speaking to, even in everyday life.
I get that one.
You get that one a lot?
Yeah, I get if you have female friends, yes, then I can have male friends. You have female friends, then I can have male friends.
It's something like that, you know what I mean?
But it's coming from a female.
Yes, I'm sure. That's why if you look, no one, male, female, man or child, can deny the laws of logic. You cannot deny it. You cannot deny it. On that bombshell, we have done the second lesson of logic. In the next one, we're going to do a little bit more. We're going to introduce the concepts, al-khams. We're going to talk about contradiction, the shurut, the conditions of a contradiction. Because we always talk about what is a contradiction. So you're contradicting yourself. But the question is, what are the conditions that must be met for someone to contradict themselves? This is a very profound question. And one, frankly, which propositional logic doesn't deal as much as Islamicate logic, They dealt with that. Almost every tract of Arabic logic, they speak about the what they call the conditions, shurut al-tanaqud, or the conditions of contradiction. We're going to go over that next session. We're going to finish this up. We're going to do that. Once you come out of this, you're going to have a sharp mind. I'm hoping so. So you can use it in three sessions and already, like, you know, you can cause damage. Most of you have come a long way. So imagine 30 sessions, imagine 300 sessions. Because we all know that if you're part of Sapiens team, then you're a real man. It doesn't follow that if you're not part of Sapiens team, then you're not a real man, but you could be a real man, real woman, real supporter. Make sure you like and subscribe and donate and come back and tune in. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.